Probably look a little strange.
Yeah.
But
okay, so we go to the last talk in this session and the workers. I think the class is going to tell us about the skinny variants cyclic universe.
Thanks, Alex. So I should start by saying that for most part, I'm admiring onlooker to the exciting developments in LQC and LQG, especially singularity resolution. I know this is the last talk, so I want to keep it informal. And what I will try to do is to pick some topics where I think there can really be a connection between loop quantum cosmology and observational cosmology. And the idea is to see, have lots of discussion and see what can or cannot be done. And it's really no better time than today to do it because of the situation. You know, cosmology has been a tremendous success and observational cosmology is going to become even more precise in the next 5 years or so. So let me, especially I think I want to talk about an alternative to inflationary paradigm, which is the cyclic cosmology. But before I do that, just a brief recap of what the standard model now looks like. So as you all know, it's the key ingredients is it's based on general theory of relativity, homogeneous isotropic cosmology, which is given by this matrix, so there's a scale factor, and small perturbations, which is encoded in this phi, which we already discussed. So there were elaborate equations written down, so that's good because I was not intending to write them down anyway. So, and the other important ingredient is from observational cosmology, we find that the fluctuations, if you take the Fourier components of these fluctuations, so this is like the amplitude square, which could in principle be anything, any function of the wave number or k. It turns out that inflation had this robust prediction that it's very near to a constant, which has now been verified in WMAP data. So that's the... That's why inflation is part of the standard model and is like a cornerstone. So the standard story begins with inflation. Then you have reheating, which is replacing Big Bang, which reproduces therefore all the successes of Big Bang models. So you have radiation, then matter, which is dark matter plus baryons, and finally recently we are again re-accelerating, so that's the dark energy. So... As you may know, Americans really love their pies. That's why it's now customary in North America, at least, to show this pie whenever you're giving a cosmology talk. And it's remarkable, really, that, you know, this picture here encodes the convergence of so many different observations from different epochs. So these are just the main ones, WMAP, CMB. This is the supernova data, giving us the local expansion history. This is largicle structure. This is baryon acoustic peak, combining these two. And then there are a host of others, ISW effect, Lyman alpha, and many others, which are all, the list goes on. And it's a real convergence, and it's like a success of both observational and our theoretical framework. So at this point, you may be wondering that why do we still have our jobs? Because, you know, we seem to have found the right model. The answer is slightly ironical, but obvious. Finally, we know for sure that we almost know nothing about the universe. Because if you look at the inflaton, as Mary already mentioned, there are many problems, but even the basic one, what really the inflaton is, what the real mechanism is. Then we go on to baryons. Why do they exist? Why didn't they annihilate with all the antibaryons? With dark matter, we at least have some favorite candidates in the supersymmetric, lightest supersymmetric particle. But when it comes to dark energy, we don't even know whether it's some real entity like the quintessence field or something to do with some other thing like modifications of gravity at large distance. So at this point, you can take two attitudes, and we already heard several talks on these lines, which is, you know, try and address some of these hard questions, for example, which may pose regarding inflation and also try to find what these quantities really are. And so that's one important area that one has to, one is pursuing. But what I'm going to try and advocate today is that there is, this is also a good time to look for alternatives. Maybe there is a, particularly since in LQC you see the singularity resolution, not only at the effective level, but, you know, you really know it's there because you look at the discrete equation and you see the bounds. And that leads to, naturally leads to non-singular alternatives of cosmology. And in my opinion, one can try to come up with a much more concrete model and put an emphasis on observational cosmology, what you can get out of it. So just to, you know, make a point here, why it is interesting today, so cosmology is, of course, the ultimate magnifier, and we don't have to thankfully pay billions to build it. So if you look at even the length that we are observing today, something like the Hubble scale, okay, if you go to say the gut scale, I'm just talking about standard inflationary scenario, and just to get the numbers, just to give you an idea. So let's say inflation happened at gut scale, and you had radiation approximately. So then this length scale gets becomes smaller by this factor, temperature today divided by the gut scale. And then let's add a further phase of inflation, so that takes it down to an even smaller length scale, e to the power minus n. And so this H naught inverse, by the way, is T naught square divided by M Planck. So once you put everything together, you find this kind of a number. So you find that this H naught inverse at the beginning of inflation was e to the power minus the number of inflation minus 75 approximately times the Planck length. And this is what is referred to as the trans-Planckian problem. So it's really true that, you know, when n, if n was greater than 75, some physics, which was some Planckian, could actually be encoded in the scales that we are observing. Okay. Also, there are other possibilities where the where Planckian effects can come through. One is if the energy density becomes close to Planckian, and also if the spatial curvature becomes Planckian. So these are, I'm just throwing out some of the things where you might actually see some signature of any quantum gravity theory, including LQC, in observations. What are the observations that are relevant? So already, of course, WMAP data is giving at around a 10% precision, and in the near future, Planck would be probing even further. Plus, there is LISA and LIGO, as was mentioned in one of the talks. So, as you know, WMAP gives the scalar spectrum pretty well, and moderate constraints on the gravity waves. But in future, what is going to discriminate between many, many different models, as you know, there are hundreds of models, are these parameters, non-Gaussianity and non-adiabaticity, as well as gravity waves. So these are just some things to remember when you are actually trying to make some predictions. Okay. So with this general motivation, let me now explore non-singular alternatives, because that's what we get in when you look at LQC, for example. And I'm going to restrict myself to FRW cosmologies where I still can trust differential equations, so I have some kind of an effective time. And this is something which definitely LQC does point, that even though you have a discrete version, my understanding is that, you know, you have this effective equation which encodes at least the physics that you need to solve the singularity. And then you have this Bekele conjecture which at least suggests that an isotropic homogeneous cosmology is a good starting point. You will get lots of insight into it. And, of course, then the idea would be to go into anisotropies and so on and so forth. But it's a good starting point. So we can now, with this, in this framework, let's look into the eternal past. Because time is no longer, you know, where, let's say, even if you have inflation, it's not that it's starting there. You have a whole contracting phase to deal with. And in fact, this is another thing which I wanted to mention in many of the talks, where where you're thinking of looking at corrections to inflation, you must include the, your initial condition has to be, you know, put at t equal to minus infinity, not at t equal to zero. So what are the possibilities? Surprisingly, if you want a non-singular universe, there are only three possibilities. And so just naively, you see that the Ricci scalar, you know, you don't want this to diverge, so the scale factor should be bounded and should not hit zero. So that tells you that there are these three. This one is known as the bouncing universe, or the pre-Big Bang scenario that may be more familiar. So you start out cold and then you contract and then there is a finite bounce and then you expand again. The next one, we had some interesting discussion on this by Param, which is the emergent universe scenario where at t equal to minus infinity, you have a static universe and then you expand. And finally, the cyclic universe, of course, is the most popular and many people have worked on this. And you have this periodic contractions, expansions. These are the bounces and these are the turnarounds. Now, of course, you can have in any of these, you can have inflation, right? You can have inflation here, you can have inflation here, and in any of these, and that would then be a standard framework, which is what we discussed in some of the other talks. But what I'm going to argue is that already these, particularly the cyclic model, captures some of the nice things of inflation, okay, that I'm going to discuss after this. So you may then start to think that do we need inflation? You know, you can become a little more ambitious and say maybe we, if some problems are already addressed here, maybe inflation is an overkill. Can we just completely do away with it and see how far we go in addressing all the good things about that inflation does for us? Now, I have a preference for this because, well, this one is very hard, for example, to address if you are now trying to compete with inflation and you're looking at either these models. One of the problems is that you start out with a really large, well, quote-unquote large universe, and you're assuming homogeneity and isotropy. It's kind of difficult to argue. Now, it may be that there is some smoothening effect which leads you to a homogeneous condition and then everything may work. But on the other hand, the cyclic models, already some mechanisms are known where this happens automatically. So now I'm going to focus mainly on the cyclic models. For example, this problem of homogeneity, isotropy, some of these issues, not completely but partly, can be addressed. And there are already mechanisms which are known to do that. Yes. Right. Spectrum, absolutely. Yes. Right. Right. Well, okay, so let me just make, okay, that's absolutely right. But on the other hand, see, this is just a generic cosmological framework, right? Now, they have, right, so they had a very specific realization of this. So the fluctuations depends on very, I mean, what fluctuations are you looking at, scalar field or thermal or what? So there are many possibilities still. But this is just from the cosmology point of view, these are just the possibilities. Okay. No, they had a specific paradigm where they had, you know, the dilaton, the scalar tensor kind of a theory. And so it's a, yeah, and they computed, for example, the spectrum for that scalar field. So it's a pretty specific thing. I mean, there are many other bouncing scenarios which are known where things might work. In fact, okay, I can discuss something that we did with Robert and Warren and all, where we looked at totally different kind of thermal fluctuations and it might work. There are some fine-tuning issues, though. Okay. So let me move on, and since I know that most of you are probably not, you know, familiar with the cosmology issues with cyclic models, And what the main thing is to have discussion and see what can or cannot be done. I mean, how we can use LQC to build a concrete cyclic model. So in order to do that, I wanted to first present some of the challenges and the good things and the bad things, essentially, that cyclic models have, so that you get a basic picture of what is the status and see how to improve. So we'll see how far we go. These are some independent but related topics. So this is what I mentioned. This is the first thing I want to do. Second, I want to talk about perturbations, and some of the issues actually was already mentioned in your talk. So I will, in fact, reiterate some of the arguments that you were giving, which is nice, and we can have more discussion on that. And then these two, hopefully I will be able to talk a little bit about a new cyclic model that I proposed, which I call Emergent Cyclic Universe, and which is something which is very interesting and I'm very excited about, is that it seems that although it's cyclic universe, it looks totally different, but there are some amazing similarities with inflation. So hopefully I'll get to talk about it just a little bit. Okay, so the first challenge, of course, if you want to have a cyclic universe, you better have a singularity resolution mechanism. That's the whole point. LQC gives you one. I myself have worked on some different ways of dealing with this. So here we looked at non-local modifications of gravity, so higher derivative correction. It's in the spirit of effective actions, and it was inspired certainly by string theory. And we found we could find some non-singular solutions. We couldn't prove that, you know, the singularity is resolved no matter where you start from. The other thing, again, I wanted to talk about, but I don't think I will have time. So this is a recent work with Stefan Alexander. I'm just going to briefly mention, because there are some interesting, maybe some interesting connections with loop quantum gravity. And the idea was that if we introduce the Holst term, we started with Holst term and we looked at what effect fermions can have. And what we found is that, as you know, that fermions typically give you a torsion, and torsion themselves can mediate a four-fermion interaction. Now, if this interaction is attractive, then something which is well known in superconductivity is that there is this BCS condensation mechanism. So essentially, if the fermions are attractive, you have a negative binding energy. And as you know, in LQC, for example, the way you get a bounce is you have this negative term, which is like minus rho c square, and that's what ensures that H can vanish. So here what happens, you have this negative binding energy, which depends on the chemical potential or the number density of the, you know, fermions that you put in. And once you are going to large densities, I mean, you're contracting, then essentially this energy can become large enough that you can get a bounce. It completely cancels the positive kinetic energy of the fermions, and you can get a bounce. So this was something nice, and if anybody is interested, I can talk more about that later. Okay. So that's something we already are making progress with respect to resolving singularity. The next issue is much easier, so you also need a turnaround mechanism. So you know closed universe, you get this cyclic model, which is also what has been found in loop quantum cosmology. The problem, of course, is that here you don't have any dark energy because curvature, you know, is still not, and doesn't give you any acceleration just before that. So that's not no good if you trust the current data. But now there are some other extensions in the aquiotic scenario and phantom-based models where just before the turnaround, you can also have a phase of acceleration. So it is possible to include consistent, you know, a whole history which is consistent. Excellent, yes, I would have. So if you have a small cosmological constant, then what typically happens is that you will cycle for a while. And as the cycles grow and at some point the energy density becomes small, then eventually you will just stop cycling and you will asymptotically approach the de-Sitter universe. And I'll come back to it. There is no turnaround. There is no turnaround, yeah.
Just a very speculative question.
Yeah.
Nobody has looked at spatial perturbation models with decaying dark matter.
With decaying, you mean quintessence?
No, let us say like there is a spatial perturbation.
Uh-huh. Right.
At some point.
Uh-huh.
It explains supernova.
Uh-huh. And then it goes away. Yeah, you could do that. I'm sure some people have looked into that as well. Yeah, I haven't. So, it's possible. Right. What about the classic puzzles? Because after all, we are competing with inflation, right? So this is, I guess, the starting point of why you can start thinking of cyclic universes as a real alternative to inflation, because the horizon problem, which is really has to do with time, amount of time you have for causal contact, is automatically solved in almost all cyclic models because you have lots of time, because you have the many, many cycles before you, and also the contraction phases. What about the flatness and entropy problem? Hopefully I'll get time to talk about what I propose, and you will see those things can be solved too. These two are the hardest, homogeneity and isotropy. And we'll be able to address some of these issues. But there are still some which remain. Now, cyclic cosmology themselves come with their problem, which is often known as the black hole overproduction problem. It's basically the fact that if you have some previous cycle, then you would have structure formation. You could have structure formation. And so you will have created large inhomogeneities. So if you have large inhomogeneities, that will affect our cycle. You know, we know that our universe is basically extremely homogeneous, for example, at CMB. So then you run into problems. Fortunately, again, this dark energy comes as a big boon because if you look at, for example, in these models with scalars and phantom, so in the quintessence models, what happens is after structure formation, everything can be completely diluted, the black holes or any inhomogeneity. So you again go back to a kind of a pristine vacuum state. In the phantom models, this was kind of interesting. What happens is you can actually see that all the black holes just disintegrate. They in fact start to shrink rather than accumulating. And so they, at the end of the day, they are no longer there. It's roughly the, you know, going towards the big rip, so everything gets ripped apart. It's that idea. Finally, this is the other key issue. How do you generate scale invariant perturbations? There are some ideas. I'll present some new ones. And this is the main starting point of the model that I will be discussing, where I started looking at Tolman's entropy problem, which I call the super Big Bang problem. And, I'll go into that. But before I do that, are there any other questions? Okay, so just as a general, you know, upshot of all this is where LQC, I think, can come into play is this issue, whether even if you start with some arbitrary condition, can you go into a homogeneous isotropic situation? And the other thing is, for example, how do you generate scale invariant perturbations? And the other question, even if you have a mechanism to generate, how do that transmit through the bounds? So that's another critical issue, which I think even if you're talking about inflation, you really have to address because the bounds is there. So in fact, before I go into the, I wanted to talk about something which is probably more relevant to LQC, and then maybe briefly mention this entropy idea. So some of the things was already mentioned in the previous talk, so that is good. So what I want to present now is a very general formalism, which I think one might be able to apply. It's like a shortcut to doing calculations of perturbations or doing perturbation theory, although we don't really have a handle on the full inhomogeneous loop quantum gravity model. Okay. So just if you have LQC, okay, just the homogeneous isotropic description, can we make some progress? And this is in line with the previous talk. So some of it is actually a repeat of the ideas, and perhaps we can have some discussion on that. So just briefly, here is the idea. So if in the standard inflationary model, this is the perturbation equation that a scalar field, for example, satisfies, and you know that there are these two different phases. One is the sub-Hubble phase, when K is much greater than H, where this term dominates over this one. So you just have a simple harmonic oscillator kind of behavior. It's just a free field theory. So the field is oscillating. And then you have the super Hubble phase when this term drops out and H is much larger than K over A. And in that case, you see that sigma, if sigma is proportional to A, it satisfies this equation. Because then, you know, this term and this term cancels. Sigma is just A. Well, then this A double prime is A. Okay, so in other words, this sigma K is some constant times the scale factor, or this phi is a constant. So this is well known that in the super Hubble phase, therefore, the scalar, the fluctuations freeze out. This is known as a freeze out. So in this picture, so any mode, now remember, this K over A is changing, obviously, because K is like fixed. It's known as the co-moving momentum for a given perturbation. And K over A, as the universe is expanding, is becoming smaller. So everything initially starts out in the sub-Hubble phase, where K over A is much larger. But then at some point, there is a mode crossing here, and then the modes become super Hubble, and it freezes out. So here, this is the Hubble radius. This is H inverse here, and this is where the modes cross, and then they again re-enter our horizon, our Hubble radius here. Okay. So now we are going to try and apply this approach to talk about a bouncing situation. How do you track perturbations around a bounce? So in a bouncing situation, so this is the inverse Hubble radius, this red curve. And this is, I'm talking about any size, any particular co-moving size which is shrinking as the universe is contracting. Then it reaches a minimum size, and then it's going to expand. And the Hubble radius is this red curve. So at infinity, its H vanishes. So its H inverse is infinite. At the bounce point, again, H vanishes. So H inverse is infinite. And so these are the infinites, and this is where you are having the bounce. Okay. So now let's look at this picture carefully. So first, you have this phase where the modes are sub Hubble, because the Hubble radius is much larger than the length scale. So you are in a sub-Hubble phase here, and also here in this expanding branch. At this point, the Hubble radius becomes smaller, so you are in the super-Hubble phase. And although this part, you may think you are again becoming sub-Hubble, but it's not really. It's just an illusion, which I will mention, I'll argue later on. So this part is roughly super-Hubble. So that's in terms of the, you know, sub and super Hubble distinction. There is another distinction here. So this is just general relativity, which would just give me that H would have just diverged if that was only the case. But then there is some new physics, some quantum gravity, LQC, or some physics which comes in, which kicks in at this scale. And at that time, you have the H turns around, has a maximum, so H inverse has a minimum, and then H goes to 0, and H inverse goes to infinity. Okay, so this is the picture. So in this range, so now what one can do, so okay, let me mention that these are the pitfalls. Okay, so there are, so these are the reasons why it is difficult to understand how to transmit perturbations from the contraction side to the expanding side, to the expanding phase. Because the first is the physics of at the bounce is often unclear, and then you have to often do numerical solutions, and you have to do matching at these points, and which are all leads to various ambiguities. And this has been what traditionally has been found. But a way to avoid this problem is the following. So notice in this entire phase, from starting from here till the new physics kicks in this entire region, you just have GR. And therefore, you know how to solve the perturbation equation, which is just there should be a phi double prime. This equation was already written down. So you know this equation. You know how to solve this equation. And similarly, in this phase as well, you know how to solve the equations. The problem is, obviously, you don't know how to solve the equation when the new physics, or let's say loop quantum gravity, is going to kick in near the bounds. But now you see this possibility, because remember, at this point also, this is, let's just look at GR first of all, the GR corrections. Now, as I mentioned, near the bounds, H can vanish, but H prime, for example, is large. It's given by the Planck scale or the density at which you are having the bounds. So if you have inflation, if you don't have inflation, this K is always going to be much smaller than the Planck scale. So you can look at, for example, the Hubble scale that we observed today and go to the bounds point, just, you know, energy density of, if you don't have inflation, you just have radiation domination, go to something like string scale or Planck scale, you will find that K is much larger, or the K inverse, I mean the wavelength is much larger than the Planck wavelength. Okay? So therefore, this term is going to be much smaller than all these terms, and you can completely ignore the K dependence, which is what was mentioned in your talk as well. Now, what about higher derivative corrections? Okay, so you can have higher derivative or some other, you know, modifications coming from loop quantum gravity. Now, here's the thing you would expect. So let's just give an example. So typically, so this need not be the case, but I'm just trying to make a point. So you have something like, say, as compared to R, which you have in GR, you would have something like, say, box of R divided by the scale at which you expect this Planckian corrections. And therefore, now this box gives you something like K squared, if you are only looking at the spatial part. And you, so relatively speaking, as compared to R, these terms are always going to be suppressed. All the spatial derivative terms are going to be suppressed because there is the Planck scale sitting here. Okay. And so I think what we can discuss is that this is going to be a generic property of any quantum gravity corrections, that you can just completely ignore these spatial derivatives. You will not be able to ignore the time derivatives. They will be there, but you can ignore these spatial derivatives. If you can do that, then we are in business, because that means ignoring the spatial derivative means you are doing just homogeneous isotropic cosmology, because there is no spatial dependence. And we know how to do that. For example, in LQC, you have an equation for, you know, an effective equation. Or you can even look at some, you know, H squared plus some corrections, some H to the power 4, H to the power 6, and so on and so forth, the full sinusoidal correction, and equal to some rho. And you know this homogeneous isotropic equation. And basically, you can just vary the scale factor, the homogeneous mode, and solve for the perturbation of that equation. Okay? So if you just know this homogeneous isotropic equations here, from here to here, and it's also going to be valid here in the super Hubble phase, because anyway, there you could ignore K, the spatial derivatives. So in this entire phase, you will again have a solution. So now you have a situation where you know the solutions in overlapping regions. You know the solution from here to here, that's GR. You know the solution from here to here because there was no spatial derivative. And again, you know the solution from here to here, that's just GR. Once you know overlapping solutions, solutions in overlapping regions, you can just look at the asymptotic form, and without any ambiguity, you can find the transfer function, essentially, how the modes here match to the modes over there. Because just by looking at the asymptotic forms, you should be able to get there. Okay, so this is just, and we applied it in a different, not in the LQC, but we had a different application in how to do this.
You checked the relation between the modes for negative types and positive types.
That's right. So you find, so let me just mention one example, which is probably not the most interesting for this audience. But we made some assumptions about the kind of perturbation equation that you can write. And so there we could find exact analytical solution for both t equal to minus infinity, negative and positive.
The assumption that you made, that the omega is constant.
Right.
Then you have that you know that everything is a function of t squared. I mean, that even the perturbation should be a function of t squared, that everything should be the same for negative and positive times.
That's right. The solutions would be exactly the same. But what happens is, which is very interesting, what happens is that the bounds can mix the two modes. I mean, I can show you the technical details, but what you find is that when you do the exact matching of how you go, so there are coefficients corresponding to each of these modes, right, both in the expanding and the contracting phase. And the basic idea is how do you get, given the coefficients in the contraction phase, can you get the coefficients in the expanding phase? And this bound solution, since we knew that, gives you that precise transfer matrix. Okay. So, Abha, I don't know how much time I have.
Out of time.
Right, so I don't want to, I guess I knew that I will run out of time. So if in a discussion session or later, if people are interested, I can talk about this entropy production and emergent universe.
Don't even know any potentials of that kind.